Welcome to Geek Nerds Tech and Black Hollywood Live. Today we have a new president. Oscar nominations are out and Super Bowl has been decided. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerds Tech.
Oh. Masters, slaves, the mentality I can't carry with this one. Me to this very day. Fuck rich, let's get wealthy. Who else gonna feed we? If I need it, I'ma get it. Wait, however, God, this is what album is this? This is
American Gangsta.
Oh, that's why I don't need no hook. No hook. Yeah. American Gangster. Welcome to Black Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. I'm Joe Braswell, joined as always by my man Akili Shine. How you doing?
I'm good, man.
That's yes, a good music choice. That's kind of like kind of in the crates.
That's not in the crates. That's one of his. That's one of my favorites. But I say that's one of the best songs on that album for sure.
Well, when I say in the crates, I don't mean like it's like a B side like no one knows about. I just mean like I haven't really thought about American Gangster as an album in a minute.
Yeah,
that's like I used to love that album.
Album's great.
Do you really think? I got a question for you on American Dreamin'. Like, how much producing did Puffy do on that record? I mean, actual producing.
I mean, who knows? I mean, unless there's video footage, who knows?
Okay. I mean,
varying definitions of what a producer is these days. So,
right.
I mean, are you actually twisting knobs? You know, are you playing chords? Are you programming drums, or are you just pointing and telling people what to do?
Yeah. I mean, I wonder about that. I'm just.
Or are you just slapping your name on it?
Well, I mean, I think about like in terms of Rick Rubin, who obviously used to put in terms of hip hop, the way he produces, used to actually program and do drum beats and was earlier in that. But now as a producer, he's very famously a guy who just kind of sits on the couch, listens to what you did, and then makes a bunch of notes. Is like, put the drums here, this, that, there, which is still great, and puts in the studio and does it. He's not twisting knobs.
Are you producing or conducting? It's a difference.
So, I mean, I'm not mad at Rick Rubin, but like when for hip hop, if you're Diddy and you're like strings there, I don't know. Anyway, I digress.
I feel that is a form of producing, but I prefer the more hands-on. I prefer to like the artists that are more hands-on, that can actually execute, you know, and give direction.
Like who are playing riffs, doing stuff, playing keys, playing stuff, like you know, like all the ones we like Dre.
Yeah, you got to be able to have the tangible, hands-on approach and be able to direct, you know, with your voicings. So, I mean, right. I think Diddy has exemplified both of that, but whatever.
Great. So, welcome to Geek Nerds Tech. We have a few things we're going to touch on, a couple things. We're really going to hit on the Oscar nominations, which happened, and the social ramifications of these Oscar nominations. Jeff Graham!
Howdy! My favorite geeks and nerds and tech.
Look at that. Special appearance by TV's Jeff Graham. So we're going to get into that, and we'll also talk a little bit about the Super Bowl hype. We'll get more into next week, but as that. And a little bit about, I mean, you know, President Trump.
And his, well, not for President Trump. Whatever. I mean,
maybe we'll glance over those. But so Oscar nominations came out yesterday morning. How do you feel about those nominations overall? I mean, like, how do you feel? Did you get a chance to see? Mm-hmm. And what do you think?
I mean, I think that this year we were
representation.
Yeah, this year we're more represented. I mean, in terms of best film, best picture, the three of the slots are black films: mm-hmm. Fences, Hidden Figures, and Moonlight. So mm-hmm. I think in terms of, and all of those films are very diverse in nature. And show a varying degree of black culture. Mm-hmm. I love that it's not monolithic. It shows, you know, that we have the ability to tell multiple different type of stories and have different type of emotions, you know, taken from each of those films. So I love the fact that people enjoyed those films. Mm-hmm. And I mean, because it completely shatters the argument that, you know, black films can't, you know, bring in revenue at the box office.
Hidden Figures.
Precisely. And also I think the slate of representation is good for the industry, mm-hmm. and also good for the audience. So I'm happy to see that, you know, Denzel's represented.
Yep.
I'm happy to see Taraji. I'm mad that she didn't get Best Actress nomination. Man, I think she deserved that for sure.
Yeah, but, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Octavia got it, though.
Right. I do think that, you know, the politics of the industry will allow itself to, you know, honor La La Land, to be honest. I think that's going to be the one that's going to sweep it. So we'll see. What do you think?
I've gone the other way on La La Land, just to start where we pick up when you left off. The more space I have from La La Land, the less I like it. I mean, I think it's a charming movie and everything else, but you know, I don't know, best original screenplay. I don't know. I mean, some of the things feel like they're just, you know, I know that Hollywood likes to self-congratulate and likes the idea of a good old-fashioned musical and all that stuff, but and as an overall piece of work, I think it deserves to maybe get a Best Picture nod. Emma Stone for sure, best actress. Other stuff, like two original songs. I think the audition song is actually a really, really wonderful song. Mm-hmm. The City of Stars over Pharrell's stuff. I mean, do they need two songs in a joint? I don't know. I mean, that's the first thing. I am happy, back to our representation and diversity. We didn't talk about the documentary category, which is very strong. Eva. I mean, you've got Eva, you've got Ezra, mm-hmm, for O.J. Made in America, somewhat controversial 10-hour television series, mm-hmm, with a couple of theatrical plays. Yep. What do you think of that? By the way, is that like cheating a little bit?
No, not at all.
So when we have our 10-hour Star Trek joint, if Netflix wants to put it in theaters or whoever,
I don't think it's cheating. I think, you know, it's the distribution platform. It's just another distribution platform.
Right.
So you want to be able to provide the content wherever people are.
But it doesn't matter. Like, my point is, like, box office receipts on that. Like, the idea, like, we're going to make this eligible for Oscar contention by putting it in theaters for a weekend.
I don't think it's based on box office.
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's just based on the fact that, like, does it run in these cities for X amount of time?
Okay. I mean, I think that's a good strategy. Like, it's a product. You want to be able to market the product as well as possible. You want to market it to the consumers who are going to watch it, and you want to market it to the people that are going to vote for it to win awards. So I don't see that as a negative.
Like elevating it from the Emmy category into the Oscar category by throwing it in the theaters. I mean,
that's like saying...
It's a distributor's choice.
That's like saying, well, why are you spending $100 million on marketing when others only spend $10 million? Like, why are you spending that much on marketing?
That's fine.
You know?
ABC wanted to put back in the day the 2-hour MacGyver movie into the theaters.
Hey, for them, take that risk.
Yeah, okay, I got you. And there's one more. So I'm drawing a blank on a giant blank on. We have one more in the documentary category.
I mean, I know we talked about Ava.
No, it's OJ, Ava, and something else, which I'm
anyway, I'm not aware of that one.
Good showing all along, good showing. But one of the things we want to talk about here is, man, our boy Bezos. He was front and center at the Golden Globes, and now he might be front and center at the Oscars. Like, he's got the first streaming network ever to have an Oscar nomination.
Oscar nomination for Best
Picture. For Best Picture. Yeah. Very good point.
Yes, sir.
That's really for Best Picture. We talk about, the ESPN move, right. But you know, good for Bezos, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think it's great that a streaming platform is getting the accolades and the recognition that it's getting. I mean, I haven't seen that movie yet, so I can't really give a proper critique on that. But I think in terms of his strategy of releasing in movies and then saying that he'll have it for the platform,
Manchester by the Sea,
having it for all those that have Amazon Prime in February, I think that's a great strategy. I know Amazon. I mean, Netflix did that first with our boy. I forgot the name of the movie with Idris.
Beast of No Nation.
But I think it was simultaneous. You could watch it on Netflix. You could stream it on Netflix and watch it in the theater. And that what the result of that wasn't. The payoff for that wasn't as great. So I think that Amazon kind of got this strategy good, like to acquire the film and then release it like a traditional release and then stream it. I think that's a great strategy for them to move forward with, too.
Yeah, to your point, like, this is it. Like, this is why you do this. This is why it's perfectly conceived and executed by Amazon. We're going to fund this movie. We're going to get it into the theaters. We're going to get Oscar attention. And then we're going to have it on our streaming service exclusively for a time. Mm-hmm. It doesn't get any better than that. Congratulations to us.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. If they win, that's going to help boost up their subscribers. I want to be an Amazon Prime member just because of that.
Mission accomplished.
Right.
Mission accomplished. I Am Not Your Negro.
What
I'm thinking.
James Baldwin.
The Baldwin joint. So, O.J. Made America 13th, I Am Not Your Negro. I mean, that's a strong showing in the documentary category. I'm very happy with this. And in the female category, we've had this before. We have 3 African-American women in the female category. Yeah. I should say not African-American because Naomi is English, but from Moonlight. But
right.
Playing an African-American person of color, for sure. I'm very happy to see Mahershala Ali get it from Moonlight. Like, that was a great, that was a fantastic performance and a great role. We got Ruth Negga for Loving, which is kind of a shocker. I mean, it's almost like they're looking at things like, we can get one black girl in here. Do we go for the English girl, or do we go for the for Taraji? They're not trying to get that Taraji get that, man. I don't know. Anyway, it's hard to argue with these choices. Moving on. So,
have you seen Loving? Oh, we'll talk about that later.
Double later. I have not, by the way, but I want to see it. Moving on. The other, what was I going to say about? Oh, the first virtual reality film to be nominated in this category. That's something. Do you think this is a trend?
I think it's marketing. I think it's marketing to open up, you know, other creators in the industry, so that this could be another revenue stream. I mean, obviously, it's going to be another. It is already another revenue stream, but to be able to have it on a grand stage like this only further perpetuates, you know, that concept being executed, you know, more ubiquitously. So I think that is the reason why. Because come on, have you heard of the film before this? Like they're creating this stream. For a reason, you know.
Yeah, I agree, but like this is kind of my thing about as I was watching the nominations yesterday. I watched them after the fact, and I was watching them. I was thinking about, I think it was every year. Do we ever even know the best live short, best animated short, best live short, best documentary short? Is that the way? That's not a category, but best live action short film is a category. I've never ever seen these places. I never know where to watch them. I've never seen one. I never know where to see one in the entire. I mean,
most of those properties have their own sites where you're able to watch it from the site.
Okay.
So if you're interested in those films in the category that got nominated, you could actually go to those sites and watch them.
But from a film like back to the Ezra Edelman documentary, the OJ thing, where do you go? Don't they have to go in a theater somewhere? Like, where do you go see these in the theater? Is it a film?
I'm sure it's the film festival circuit.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Why aren't we making a live action short? Like, that seems like a nice way in. Anyway, okay. I mean, it's a marketing ploy. I'll take it. Oscar snub kicks off debate on social media. That's a story we would do. I'll kind of, you know, skip on that a little bit. But there are a lot of snubs since we're here. Do you care? I mean, we talked about Taraji. Do any of these snubs, passengers, people are talking about.
It's not a snub.
You know, what about your boy Sully? Tom Hanks out. I mean, the Pharrell and Taraji to me are kind of snubby. Deadpool, is that a snub?
No.
Right, that's not a snub. I mean, the fact that they were even having a conversation about him being in the conversation is good enough. I mean, the movie did well, but let's take it easy. Slow down. It's an Oscar movie. I don't know. Anything else?
Nothing else, man.
Okay. I want to go on this Trump story about the EPA and the USDA. I mean, and Trump. Trump's ordering these media blackouts.
Yeah.
You know. And the EPA and the Department of Agriculture are the latest of these.
Right.
I mean, the raging war against the EPA, and I mean, like, I'm anti-planet. Like, I don't know why I'm wasting time on this. But the idea, what do you have to say about this?
I mean, really quickly, I think that it just shows the Trump regime and how really it's operating on multiple levels and the layering of it and how just dysfunctional and disastrous it is. The fact that you'll silence these federal agencies that are more green in nature and promoting, you know, more advocacy for people to be environmentally conscious. And, you know, Trump is saying blackout, no messaging. You know, I want to be able to control this messaging because obviously the messaging you've been putting out goes against my policies and goes against, you know, the campaign that I would like to bring to fruition. So the fact that he is using his presidential executive power to be able to do that and silence their social media, I think says a lot, you know. But I think it's working against them. I mean, there was a case, I forgot what national park it was, but they actually, you know, one of the employees actually just said F that and tweeted out a whole bunch of factual information about things that are happening with, you know, CO2 emissions and just the environment in general. And I just love the fact that there was some type of activist stance against him, against that order, you know.
And then it puts him in positions like, hey, I'm going to get a bunch of facts about what's happening to our environment, and then you're going to black them out. Like, it's like, it's just, you know, it's so fascistic. And, you know, anyway, it's definitely some interesting times, if not scary. Speaking of which, there's a company in Seattle that's starting a new, it's kind of, I don't know how newsy this is, but I'll give them credit. I think it's called Presseterity, is how you pronounce it? It's a news site using, it's a bit sort of like, I don't know if it's an anti-Trump site, but it's all fact, it's a fact-based site here. And I just, I feel like that in the wake of what we talked about with Facebook and Facebook doing, last week talked about Facebook sort of doing their version of this. I like the idea of the rise of a fact-first sort of generation of news. So we can't sort of have this fake news. We can't have this, you know, if your brand is facts, you can't really be called fake news. I mean, Kellyanne Conway over the weekend coined the term alternative facts, which is insane. But I don't know. This is cool, right?
I mean, yeah, I think it's great because it's about accountability and it's about streamlining all the information into one centralized place so that people can access them very quickly and easily in a very easy way. So I like the fact that this site is dedicated to fact-checking Trump, his campaign all the way up into being president-elect and now his presidency. And so the fact that you can go there and type in, you know, you type in a keyword of a particular issue and then you'll be able to see his tweets or see, you know, some of his live speeches or whatever and be able to, and then see the articles that are connected to those and be able to really do a deep dive on stuff. And really, I think it's a great portal for people to kind of just like have that access to it just in case, like, hey, 2 years from now we forget something he said in 2016 leading up to his presidency, and now we can go back and the people have this information to be able to, like, nah buddy, you said this or you did this. Like, I love the fact that these Seattle guys, these Seattle developers thought of that, because I think our reliance on traditional news media sometimes does get skewed, and even with the whole fake news, I think to have a place that has, you know, great information is dope for all of us.
Yeah, I agree. I hope there's definitely more of these sites, and I want them, the proliferation of these sites, because I'm wondering, as traditional media, I don't say it's dying, but, you know, traditional media is in trouble. And so if we can get the rise of a new generation who relies on this place, and we can base it in fact, and we can sort of build a coalition of folks who listen and value facts as opposed to hyperbole, then we're in good shape. Right off to a good start. Hazley, who's kind of a pop star, who I think is okay. Is she American? I can't know if she's American or English, but like, sounds Ashley finger pain. That sounds pharyngeal pain. That sounds English to me. Anyway, she goes by Hazley and Halsey. And she did something dope during the Women's March. She had a statement about Planned Parenthood and basically said, whoever retweets this, I'm donating $1 to every person who retweets this. And now she's donating over $100,000 to Planned Parenthood. I think that's amazing. I think that's a great form of put your money where your mouth is activism using technology, using social media. I think it's a great thing. And it's also a way to share and get a message out. I think this is really smart.
Yeah, absolutely. I think she hit all the touch points. You know, she raised money for an organization that, you know, she actually used at one time. And I think it brought awareness, it brought community. And I think I love to see other entertainers / activists utilize social media platforms in this way, because I think this is a good way to, you know, stand for something. And like you said, put your money where your mouth is, not just, you know, a random tweet here or there or a random appearance, but you're actually going to put up your own bread to put a flag in the soil of what you believe in. So I applaud her for that. I think that's great.
Yeah. Moving on, I want to get to the Snapchat story, because it's, you know, Snapchat is about to, I think they're about to go public, right? Is that their deal? They're about to go public, and they are really sort of making all these moves to position themselves as a media company. We talk about all the time about, like, these digital companies, are they media, are they not, blah blah. Snapchat is making no bones about it, they are going to be a media company and not such a technology company, so much so that they're really now putting their money where their mouth is in terms of ads and going in ad heavy and doing this. You know, they're selling ads like Nielsen style, like, in other words, telling advertisers, you pay for this money, I can guarantee you X amount of eyeballs.
And not just that, not X amount of eyeballs, but very specific demographics, certain age groupings, certain
micro-targeting.
Exactly, and I think that's where the money is, because a company wants to be able to target a specific group. And so to be able to have the information that is provided by the platforms where we'll align to that targeting, I think is going to make them really, 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 really strong. So
it's smart. I think it has a lot to do with that. I think the dude who used to run Sony Television, or one of the guys who's kind of not a popular guy in the industry, is now running Snapchat, and much to like everyone in Hollywood's eye roll. Right. But for him, he's like, haha, I'm coming over here to do this, and he's sort of implementing a lot of TV stuff in the tech world. Yeah. And right, and just in time for him to go public, it seems to be working. So I don't know.
And I think, you know, the thing with apps and just how, you know, apps gather our information is much more. Some more specificity than, you know, a Nielsen box in a home in America that's monitoring what television shows you watch. Like, this is getting all your information, because just to sign up for the app, you got to put in so much information, and not just that, it's monitoring all the things you search for. So to be able to have all that information in one place and then be able to funnel that and sell that and use that, I think it leverages them to be much, much stronger than a traditional news media company, because they have more information of the people that are participating on the platform.
Yeah, so. I agree. I think it's fantastic. This is a story about Starbucks and Microsoft and a few others in the Seattle area raising like almost $5 million, $4.5 million in a month to help homeless family. It's an initiative called No Child Sleeps Outside. I think it's fantastic. I think it's a great cause. I think it's all wonderful. The thing I want to ask you about and talk about is. This form of philanthropy is great, but is this, I mean, on one hand, it's like, this is kind of great in this administration where the government will no longer start to do some of these things. Some of these companies and us as individuals may have to pitch in and do some of these other like social and philanthropic and do other things through philanthropy. The question I have is, I think Republicans or the Trump administration may say, see, that's exactly right. The private sector should take care of this stuff. So, I mean, does it hurt when stuff like this is very successful? I mean, it's great, but it's also kind of like it makes the rights case of government, less government, more private sector. I mean, how do you feel on this?
I don't think so. I think we all have a responsibility to rid our society of all the ills, mm-hmm. from an individual perspective all the way to a company organizational perspective, yep. and governmental perspective. So sure. I don't think that it deludes that at all. I think if a company wants to put their fingerlings into a social issue and put their money where their mouth is, I think that's great for the company. The government still has a responsibility to aid in process, you know, people's struggles. And so I think everyone should play their part, you know, at the highest level they can.
I agree. So. I mean, I agree with that fundamentally too. And I think that this is this doesn't mean there's no such thing as these things aren't mutually exclusive. It's not now that, you know, people want to help, therefore the government doesn't have to do anything.
Right.
I want to talk about our friends over at Blue Apron. Oh man, I didn't get a chance to try it. We didn't get a chance to get our Blue Apron meal, but I can say I've had them before. I've done it before. Blue Apron is a service where instead of, you know, going out, spending a lot of money on expensive meals, you can actually have wonderful meals delivered to you that you can cook yourself, that you and your significant other or you by yourself can make for really about $10 a day. Blue Apron use fresh ingredients. They use sustainably sourced seafood and meats and beef and chicken. So it's not just you're getting a box of frozen junk. The food that you're getting is actually sort of high quality, great food. You get it. It comes fresh right to your door. It comes with all these wonderful recipe cards. The everything is portioned out. I've done this before. The all my herbs are fresh herbs. The meat is there. It's actually great. And then they got these sort of chefed up Food Network style meats. Dinners I would never do, like spicy shrimp and Korean cakes with cabbage and furl cake, pork chops, garlic piccata, scallion rice and spinach, mushroom and chipotle pepper enchiladas with lime sour cream. I ain't never made no lime sour cream in my life, but I'm sure that's fantastic. That sounds delicious. Mushroom and chipotle pepper enchiladas. That's your vegan option there. So, I mean, oh, not vegan, but it's your vegetarian option. So, you know, Blue Apron is doing a lot, and you should check them out. You can go Check out this week's menu. Get your first three meals for free with free shipping. Go to blueapron.com/geek. That's blueapron.com/geek. You love how it feels, how it tastes. Create incredible home-cooked meals at Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/geek. Blue Apron, it's a better way to cook. Next week, we're going to try this Blue Apron, and we're going to have a review on it.
All right, now.
Jeff and Marissa remind me to get my Blue Apron stuff. All right, moving on. So the Super Bowl has been decided over the weekend. Two of your favorite teams, actually. Okay. I'm torn on the Super Bowl because I really like Atlanta and I really like what they're doing as a story. I like Arthur Blank as an owner. I like the city. I think it's fair. I'm happy for the city. I'm happy for, you know, Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and all that stuff. I will say, as a non-Patriot fan, I'm not thrilled, but I am. I think I'm more anti-Goodell than I am anti-Patriot. So I do want to see Tom Brady stick it to Goodell, because I think Goodell is the worst. But I don't know, do you have any opinions on this stuff?
I mean, I do. I'm definitely not a New England fan in any you know, way, shape, or form. It's good to see Atlanta back. I mean, I'm a Raiders fan, so
I knew this about you. You're a Raiders fan?
Raiders fan, bro. I mean, generationally a Raiders fan.
Oh, you're from Oakland. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right.
And so, I mean, our crash and burn this season still stinks, but right. Whatever.
Yeah. You guys, you'll be all right. You'll be fine in Vegas.
Hey, man, you're a 49ers fan. You hush.
I got nothing to say.
All right, thank you.
No room to talk. Take my two wins and go.
Thank you.
but more importantly, the Super Bowl is here, and every year we kind of talk about the ads and the frequency of these ads and how they are, the proliferation of them spread out beyond television and into social and what this means for these things. And now, you know, Adweek has this ad tracker, and it got to the point now we're almost in this countdown. What you're seeing now is proliferation of not just the ads themselves, but so many teasers to the ads. You saw them in the championship games, like all these like teaser campaigns for the ads, like leading up to, you know, it's almost like we're starting to tell the story. It's like a trailer to the commercial, which is interesting. I guess it's a new way of ramping this up, right?
I mean, for the Super Bowl, commercials just aren't commercials. It's a form of entertainment, so it's almost like watching a micro short film. And, you know, obviously a lot of them are very comedic. And, they have a lot of sophistication. Sometimes you might see new cinematography and new, you know, CGI type of stuff. So I think that is kind of cool. And just in terms of just how they're making the commercialization aspect of the Super Bowl an event, you know, and I think packaging that and branding that as such, I think is cool, because people are interested in how things were made, what agency made it, you know, like what the brand story is, how it connects. Like we live in that type of world where you're kind of more tribal with the brands that you associate with. So to be able to have more content, ancillary content to provide whatever your interests are, I think is good.
I agree 100% what you're saying. I feel like over the last couple of years, I feel like the buzzworthiness and the quality of Super Bowl ads have gone down. I don't know if my expectations are higher. I don't know if I'm just kind of like, you know, shoulder shruggy. I feel like I've been sort of disappointed at the ads, especially the last two. Especially last year.
Saturation, man.
I mean, I don't think there's any real takeaways. I mean, monkey robot baby or whatever it was. Baby pair. What's that Mountain Dew one? I mean, there's some that are like weird, but nothing. I can't find any real takeaways. So I'm really hoping for something, you know, comedic or spectacular or something to grab my attention. The teaser trailers so far, I'm snoozing. So far,
I mean, but even to that point, I think that maybe there's a carpet pull with that, because a lot of the commercials we already see before the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
you know, you can watch them on YouTube, so it's not, the surprise factor is kind of eliminated. And I mean, to what I just said, like I think it's just the saturation of everything. Like so much content, it's just so much brand everywhere. It's on our Instagram, our Facebook, it's everywhere. It's like, who cares? Like,
it's hard to make an event when everything is in your face all the time. I'm much more thrilled about the Apple commercial with the dude dancing around than I am about, like, that to me is one of the best ads around. So you know, it's hard to say like what they're gonna do in Super Bowl to top that, but we'll see. Star power is always a thing, so we'll see how that works out. Last but not least, Star Wars 8 has a title, The Last Jedi. We can only assume that is referring to Luke Skywalker, who was in the final scene of Episode 7. I'm still very, very, very excited. What do you think?
I mean, I love the fact that, you know, this title could mean, it could be, it could have a singular meaning, mm-hmm. like as you just alluded to, like one person, or could have a plural meaning, like the Last Jedi could be a group of Jedis, you know, or it could be a whole faction that we don't know about yet. So
that's right.
That's my take on it.
That is good. It also sort of has this foreshadowing. If we go along the same, you know, Force Awakens was very much like A New Hope, and it felt like this almost identical plot beats and everything else in setting up the story. And so we know episode 5, Empire Strikes Back, was darker and everyone loses and everything bad happens. I wonder if this is setting that up for a very similar thing. I mean, yeah. Which could mean, my prediction is Luke gonna die? The Last Jedi? You know, are we heading towards a dark sort of?
But do true Jedis die though?
I don't know.
They don't.
I mean,
they're still part of the Force.
Obi-Wan,
if he's still here,
and Anakin and Yoda are floating around.
Exactly. Like,
I would have Han Solo's gonna turn up like, yo,
right?
So I don't know. He's not a Jedi, but yeah. Also, what you wonder what they're gonna do with Leia. You
right, know, that's an interesting question.
I know she shot everything, pretty much all of her stuff for episode 8, so I have to really talk about episode 9 and what her...
How they're going to transition
her
out.
She's supposed to play a big role in episode 9, and now, you know, so we'll see how that
goes. Exactly.
Alright, that's all we got for this. We're going to get out of here, kind of a short show today. I don't know, anything else before we go?
Not at all.
Alright, where can people find you,
They can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. Where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat. Well, Instagram, Twitter at Joe K. Brad as well, Snapchat at JK Braz. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagrammy, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Exactly.
The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.